Welcome inside Appalachia. I'm Jessica Lilly. Today we're taking a look at how the opioid epidemic is affecting veterans who are twice as likely than civilians to become addicted to opioids.
The military attracts certain people, athletically inclined or very active people. You know, it's hard on your body. Over time, you know, most people that get out of the service are going to be hurting.
So some veterans are trying some alternatives to taking opioids for their chronic pain. Air Force veteran Darren Yowell teaches yoga to fellow vets.
To me, the best way to help others is not to baby people. It's to challenge them. We all want to be challenged. One person described my yoga class one time as yoga without the granola.
And we'll also hear the next installment of Colt Brogan's Struggle to Stay story. This week, we'll hear from Colt's mom.
Doing something so, like, old-fashioned in some ways, like farming is kind of old-fashioned. Do you think that he'll be able to make a living at it?
I hope so. I think we need it still. Absolutely need it still.
That's the other side of the flag, right? A farmer. It's a coal miner and a farmer on the West Virginia flag.
You'll find these stories and more this week, Inside Appalachia. Welcome Inside Appalachia. I'm Jessica Lilly. It's been about 20 years since the opioid epidemic started. Appalachia has been called ground zero for this crisis, and West Virginia leads the country in drug overdose deaths. Today's show explores how this epidemic is affecting veterans who are twice as likely to become addicted to opioids than the general or civilian population. So how did we get here? Well, according to a report by the U.S. National Library of Medicine National Institute of Health, nearly 10 years ago, in 1999, the Veterans Health Administration launched an initiative to add pain as the fifth vital sign. This required doctors to use a pain intensity rating for all patient visits. This wasn't unique to the VA. In the 1990s, several medical associations across the United States made several shifts to treating pain as the fifth vital sign, as we heard in our show last week called Treatment and Mistreatment, Our Complicated Relationship with Pain Inside Appalachia. Here's a quick recap of the episode.
I'm 33 years old, and I've been living with chronic pain for about 13 years. It's frustrating because it never goes away. The only time that I'm not in pain is when I'm asleep.
When I was away from my family, it was, a lot of times I would do pills just to take my mind off that. It is all right, guys. Everybody had their own little problems, but these all good people just had problems. You know, like you said, blue collar people, you know, we're out here busting our butts. We're out here making good money. We're out here keeping your lights on. Things happen, and some things you just can't control.
What we face as specifically in our state in West Virginia is blue-collar workers. So brother-in-laws, people who are working in the mines or electricians who are construction workers.
You know, if you're in a fast-paced ER, you don't have time to try to educate the patients, and a lot of times you just want to get the patients in and out because you have a trauma or something more severe going on, and it's just easier just to give 4 or 5 days worth of opiates and get the patient going so you can see the next person.
And you can catch the rest of that episode on wvpublic.org. Like blue-collar workers, chronic pain is fairly common for our veterans. About 60% of military personnel returning from deployments in the Middle East and half of older veterans from previous deployments suffer from chronic pain nationwide. We start the show with a story from a veteran who knows what it's like to come home from battle with painful scars. His name is James McCormick. We've heard from him before on Inside Appalachia. He's a highly decorated soldier who also coordinates the Warriors to Agriculture program in West Virginia.
I'm a retired U.S. Army captain. During the second time I went to Iraq, I was wounded. I was gunshot more than once. In my left hand, I had nearly every bone in my hand shattered from a bullet that tore through my 50 cal mount and tore through my hand and another bullet that hit me in the chest in one battle. You were told to basically suck it up and drive on, and I was okay with that.
After his injury, McCormick struggled to manage his pain. Military doctors gave him opioids for his physical pain, along with several other medications to deal with post-traumatic stress disorder and anxiety.
But they had me on a large number of different medications, you know, and I wasn't really keen to that. I really started to look at what I was taking, you know, and essentially I was taking a pill to help you sleep, a pill to help you deal with pain, a pill to help you deal with everyday life's ups and downs, your Prozacs and your different, you know, mood-altering pills is what I would call them. I wasn't myself.
But he says the doctors didn't explain how to properly take the medication, and they didn't warn him that combined with alcohol, the medicine they had prescribed could become a deadly cocktail. So one night, on top of his medication, he drank too much whiskey.
And it didn't go very well with these pills, and I can remember laying on my back and feeling like an elephant was sitting on my chest, and I could not hardly breathe. But I couldn't get up either. It was like you can't move. And it was a very scary feeling. I realized that I was in a point of half awake, half asleep state. Eventually, it was just sheer will, honestly, that I reached over and I was laying in the floor of my living room and I pulled myself up on the couch and I just made myself stay awake that whole night. Just walked and walked and cold showers. And I am certain that had I just laid there and given up, I probably would have died. Because I could feel, you know, I wanted to roll over on my side so I could breathe. I could feel my tongue dropping back in the back of my throat. Everything's relaxing on you.
McCormick managed to keep himself up that night. He was 37 years old, and he decided he wanted to live.
The angel of death must have been really close on that day. And to really soak that in, and start looking at your kids and start looking at your family and realizing that I'm not ready to leave them yet.
Even though every experience is different, McCormick says he knows a lot of veterans who are hurting in the same way he was, suffering from the mental pain of post-traumatic stress disorder on top of physical pain.
I do know what it's like to be addicted to something. You know, I mean, I have been, I do know what it's like to be in combat. I know what it's like to be to have your whole view on humanity just destroyed by certain events that happen in your life. I know what it's like to be shot. I know what it's like to be down in the bottom of a Humvee and hearing Allah Akbar being shouted all around you, and everybody seems like in the whole country is trying to kill you. But fortunately, and what I call by the grace of God, I was able to survive that. So how do we go forward? How am I going to live through all of that and then come back here and lay down and die in the floor of my living room because of pills and alcohol? That's not the way to go. That's not the way to go. If I can survive that, why can't I survive this? You know, why would I go through all of that to just come back here and throw it all away, you know, because I need to take a pill.
And so the experience was a wake-up call. He stopped taking his medication, all of it, the opioids, antidepressants, after he read how dangerous they were when combined with each other. At this time, he was still serving in the Army. It was 2005, and the military doctors didn't give him any other options to treat his pain. He just suffered through it. It wasn't long after he stopped taking the pills for his physical pain that he began suffering from depression. Then came another turning point. McCormick began to realize his body just didn't move as well as it did before. But he was still eager to serve his country and keep working.
I was on my way to Afghanistan in 2008. And they found me medically unfit for deployment. And I'll never forget it. I was going through the medical review board process and, you know, at deployment site, and they're like, well, you know, Captain, you can't deploy. And I was taking an individual deployment. You know, I volunteered for this. I wanted to go back overseas. I wanted to go to Afghanistan. I wanted to get on both fronts of this war. And they said, you can't go. And so, you know, for me, it was a letdown for me. But I realized that I was not the man that I was.
He didn't want to leave the military, and the medical retirement was devastating in many ways. But retirement did lead James to an alternative treatment for his chronic pain,
through his VA benefits. We'll hear more about that in just a little bit. A lot of people are struggling with the same things McCormick described, PTSD and mental pain on top of multiple injuries. In 2013, the Center for Investigative Reporting found that since the 9/11 terrorist attacks, the number of opiate prescriptions by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs has skyrocketed. The investigation showed that prescriptions for opiates to veterans surged by 270% in the years between 2001 to 2012. Some of the highest rates of opioid prescriptions were given to veterans in southern West Virginia. The Veterans Administration says that in 2012, one out of every four veterans who visited the VA in Beckley, West Virginia, was prescribed opioid painkillers, much higher than the national average of all veterans. So how did things get so bad? It's a complicated answer, but one part of it may be an effort started in the 90s to actually help ease suffering. As we mentioned earlier, in 1999, the VA introduced pain as the fifth vital sign. Well, some VA doctors say they'd like to see that decision reversed. One of those doctors is Dionisio Ruby, chief of medicine at the Clarksburg, West Virginia VA Medical Center.
And we always say that until we remove the fifth vital sign, this will continue to be a problem. There's no purpose for that to be there. If a patient has pain, they can say, I have pain. There's no real great vital sign that will tell you whether the patient's telling you the truth or not.
Ruby says there is enough evidence proving that opioids are highly addictive, especially among the veteran population, to remove pain from the list. Other doctors we spoke to agree. So what took so long? Our producer Roxy Todd asked the VA about this. Mark Hall works at the Huntington VA.
You know, 20 years ago, you had mentioned that, you know, we didn't know how addictive these opioids were. How come it did take so long, I guess, for the most comprehensive health system in the country to realize that this is such a problem?
That's a good question. I think with any long-term health outcomes studies, it takes that long to really see the full effect of a decision. And, you know, when pain was made the fifth vital sign, it takes a while for that to get implemented. And then it takes a while for, you know, to see that and to look at it. You know, studies are expensive and they take a lot of time to see the outcomes. And it's not immediate, you know. I think it's just kind of the way the pendulum swings.
Since 2012, the number of opioids prescribed at VAs in West Virginia and the country has gone down. But is it ethical to take pain medication away? This has become a huge debate throughout the medical community in recent years, and with good reason. After all, there are still a lot of veterans suffering with chronic pain. So how do doctors help these patients get the treatment they need without causing further harm by creating addiction? Well, for the past 3 years, the VA has begun implementing new pain management recommendations for treating veterans with chronic pain. In 2013, the VA released a new set of guidelines called the Opioid Safety Initiative, which concluded that opioids are not the best treatment for most types of chronic pain. Instead, VA doctors are encouraged to prescribe alternative therapies like yoga, physical therapy, and chiropractic care. How are veterans reacting when they're prescribed yoga or physical therapy to treat their pain? Well, that's coming up in the next half hour of our show. You're Inside Appalachia. I'm Jessica Lilly. We'll be right back. Support for Inside Appalachia is provided by Stewart's Opera House, presenting the Nelsonville Music Festival in Nelsonville, Ohio, June 1st through 4th, featuring Ween, They Might Be Giants, Emmylou Harris, Connor Oberst, Jenny Lewis, Rodriguez, and over 50 more bands. More at nelsonvillefest.org. On On today's show, we're hearing from veterans who struggle with chronic pain, how they're dealing with it, and what the VA is doing to help them manage their pain, encouraging alternative treatments instead of opioid therapy. This shift is due in part to a growing body of research showing veterans are at risk of becoming addicted to opioids. Earlier this year, the Center for Ethics and the Rule of Law at the University of Pennsylvania released a report that concludes there is a causal link between post-traumatic stress disorder and becoming addicted to drugs and alcohol. Eric Newhouse is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author. He's conducted hundreds of personal, in-depth interviews with veterans and reported extensively about veteran issues. He says he's not surprised to learn that veterans are more likely to develop an opioid addiction.
50% of all vets who go to the VA are complaining of chronic pain. And as a result, there are an awful lot of prescription pain meds that are prescribed. When you stop to think about what a soldier does, it's a very physical job. He's got a lot of pain associated with it. He works through the pain, and when he's done, the painkiller is almost always there. So it's not at all surprising that vets are much more heavily vulnerable than the average population.
And because they're more likely to have chronic pain, therefore they're more likely to be prescribed, and just the accessibility to it can leave them vulnerable?
Exactly. But the VA also is one of the biggest providers of pharmaceuticals in the world. They are throwing pills at people almost regularly. I know a vet here in Charleston who wakes up in the morning. He's prescribed 18 different medications that he takes in the morning. He takes another 10 at night. He's complaining about all the meds he's taking. And the doctors tell him, well, you need it. Take them. And as a former soldier, he obeys orders. And so he doesn't like it, but he does it.
The VA recently announced that they will start offering mental health care to, quote, bad paper veterans. Bad paper meaning a veteran who has separated from the military with the label of anything other than honorable. An article in the Military Times points out that this is part of what the VA is doing to get a handle on the amount of veterans who are committing suicide. The latest data revealed that about 20 a day were taking their own lives. Given the nature of their training that military personnel go through, it's very specific and designed to, you know, create very specific types of work. Why would the way a veteran is discharged create a dangerous situation or make them more vulnerable or susceptible to perhaps committing suicide for these vets?
Vets who are dishonorably discharged or anything other than honorably discharged are not eligible for health care of any kind. And these are guys that are hurting in the same way that the other vets are hurting. But when they're denied treatment, that problem only worsens. You've got to do something to help them. And I think it's wonderful that that something is at least being considered that would open up health care for dishonorably discharged vets who need help as much as any other.
What do the vets that you've talked to who have been discharged with something other than honorable, what do they say to you about how they feel whenever they are discharged with anything other than honorable?
I think they feel that they were robbed. I think there's a lot of anger out there. Most of them don't have the means to be able to get help privately, and so they just fall through the cracks.
What about the concept of loyalty? It seems like the training that military and our veterans that they undergo, a big part of that seems to be training of loyalty to their country. And then when they're discharged for anything other than honorable, it seems like it could create this really deep sense of betrayal and depression. Have you heard anything about that, and can you speak to it?
Absolutely. The kids who are going into the service are going in voluntarily. They're going in to serve their country, and that they expect that their country will be loyal to them as well. One of the things that is drilled into every one of them in basic training and later in service is no soldier left behind. That is to say, if your buddy gets shot, you'll risk your life to pull him out. So they do this, and they give everything that they have to their fellow servicemen and ultimately to their country. And then if they come home and they are given a less than honorable discharge and suddenly their country has forgotten them. They are the person that has been left behind. And it seems an incredibly hypocritical system to them. And I don't blame them.
That was Eric Newhouse, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author of two books about veterans' issues and alcohol addiction. So as we heard earlier in our show, some VA doctors are changing the way they treat pain. Dr. Ngozi Ifobi, chief of the Division of Rehabilitation Services at the Martinsburg VA, says it takes more time, but sometimes sitting down and listening to patients can reveal a more complex medical need.
There's so much more going on than their foot or their back or, you know, they're struggling. You know, they're struggling with their husband. They're struggling with their wife. They're struggling with flashbacks. They're struggling with their kids. You know, they're struggling reconnecting after coming back. There's so much. And, you know, you give them a pill and you walk them, walk out of your office and, you know, but spending the time to talk to them to really find out what's going on, you know, again, being mindful. You're saying, okay, yeah, you're upset. Wow, that's kind of hard for you, right? And they're like, yeah. You don't have, there's no quick answer. They have to work through it.
Dr. Ifobi says sometimes patients can be resistant to doctors who suggest they try something other than pills for their pain. The VA where she works in Martinsburg has a lot of resources for veterans seeking treatment for chronic pain other than opioids, including physical therapy, chiropractic care, and yoga. Many VAs across the country have started incorporating yoga into their medical centers to help veterans cope with chronic pain. Roxy Todd spent some time at the Martinsburg VA to learn more about one of their alternative therapies for chronic pain, the Mindful Yoga class.
Inhale. Exhale, bring both legs up. Chest for three breaths. Perfect. Good job, Mr. Pickford. That's perfect.
In a large gym at the Martinsburg VA, Air Force veteran Darren Yowell is leading 14 veterans in a yoga class. His students call him Chewy.
One person described my yoga class one time as yoga without the granola, because I'm not going to talk about wheat fields and things like this. It's going to be an instructional yoga class. Like, this is how you do this move. This is what it benefits. This is how you modify it.
Bring your feet down, bring your knees to a bent position.
Most of the people in this class are men, and all are veterans who are dealing with some type of pain.
Really working your lower back here.
One of Chewy's students is Army veteran Adam Smith.
Military attracts certain people, you know, athletically inclined or very active people. You know, it's hard on your body. Over time, you know, most people that get out of the service are going to be hurting.
Adam says he's in pain most mornings. He takes some pain medication. But yoga has improved his mobility more than any other medical treatment.
I'm so happy that the VA has embraced yoga, and I'd like to see them embrace it more. You know, without a pill, you can feel better. I mean, that's pretty powerful, and you can calm yourself down and feel so much better without taking a pill, without relying on somebody else doing something to you. Yoga, you're moving your own body.
Straighten your legs out. Lay down, palms facing up.
Building that sense of independence is important for healing, says Chewy.
And to me, the best way to help others is not to baby people. It's to challenge them. We all want to be challenged.
Chewy says he struggled finding purpose when he left the military in 1991. When he got out, he'd planned on becoming a school teacher, but that didn't work out. He became addicted to alcohol, then to harder drugs, like pain pills.
Went up and down on a roller coaster after that for the next 20 years, not really using the VA, not wanting nothing to do with it, actually, for multiple reasons. But in 2010, I was in Danville, Virginia, and I was in pretty bad shape. A friend of mine got me to the community-based outpatient clinic down there, basically just dropped me off at the door and said, y'all got to help him. You know, I believe that people, like my situation, I just needed somebody to help me.
He eventually came to the Martinsburg VA and stayed here for 9 months in inpatient psychiatric care to manage his addiction.
When I came here as a patient, I felt like a forgotten person.
He's been sober since 2010. A few months into his treatment, he heard about a job with the VA as a recreation specialist. This was something he was good at, so he applied for the job and got it.
They were building this gym, and when I got hired, I was shown this gym, and something just clicked. There were certain things, you know, before I became involved in drugs and alcohol that I was very strong at, that the drugs and alcohol took from me. But once I got clean, I took them back. And now I'm going to use my gifts that I was given to try and help others.
Chewy can be found here, teaching a yoga class every Monday morning and another class in the afternoon. Students go through a 12-week course that's designed to teach veterans how to stay active and cope with mental stress, like post-traumatic stress disorder.
Very good challenge, everybody. Good job.
There are veterans of all ages in the class. Some actually set down their canes and walkers while they do yoga. Chewy helps them modify the moves, but he shows them they can do more than they thought they could.
So even though it's a group class, it has to be done different than a yoga class on the outside. If you go to a yoga class on the outside, it's very fluid. You walk in there, the instructor assumes that you know everything. Whereas I try to be very instructional. Even though it's a group, I still try to have to go around one-on-one, and you got to be able to recognize everybody's limits and what they can and can't do.
When the Martinsburg VA began offering yoga a few years ago, it didn't seem as though many veterans were interested. But that changed. Veterans asked for more yoga classes, and Chewy's session continues to fill up, says Mike McAleer, the public relations officer at this VA.
When you first tell a veteran, most veterans anyway, that you're going to, maybe you should try some yoga, they're probably going to laugh at you or mock you a little bit. But once they get in there and they realize that, as you notice, not everybody was at the same level. And it's okay, because you don't have to all be experts at what you're doing, as long as your body's starting to move and you're starting to feel a little bit better. So I think once you cross the threshold and you give it a try, you're going to be there for life.
So now I want you to completely relax. The focus changes. Your breath does not change. You keep the rhythm of your breathing.
This yoga class isn't only for veterans who were injured in battle. It also teaches breathing and mindfulness, or being aware of your body and the way your mind affects health. This is especially important to yoga student Stacy Sage, a Navy veteran who's battling breast cancer. Yoga has become a way for her to focus her thoughts on healing her body.
Because I am on my fourth regimen of chemo, and I need to do something to keep my mind off of what's going on internally.
Stacy says her first yoga class gave her enough energy to go home and do yard work all afternoon.
My husband was out chopping wood, and normally I would go in the house. I actually helped him carry the logs to, you know, where we store them, and so it just had me energized. Chewy helped me that morning, but it then carried on through the rest of the day.
Stacy's had breast cancer since August of 2015. The cancer has metastasized, which means it's spread to other parts of her body.
Sad to say, but in a year, my goal is just to be alive and, you know, healthier. That's my goal. Mm-hmm. Yeah. With metastatic cancer, it's one day at a time. Everyone says I have the best attitude when it comes to having cancer, but my son's 7, so I have to do what I have to do to be there for him. And this is part of it.
This interview was recorded back in January. We checked back in with Stacy earlier this week to find out how she's doing. She says, on top of the breast cancer, she was recently diagnosed with lung cancer, too, and her health has deteriorated in the last few months. So she had to stop going to yoga class, at least for now. But she says she still wakes up each morning to do breathing exercises and meditation that she learned in yoga class. For Inside Appalachia, I'm Roxy Todd in Martinsburg, West Virginia.
I want you to breathe
Now I want everybody to close their eyes and become completely relaxed. Completely connected to the earth through your chair or through your mat. Completely relaxed.
Like the Martinsburg VA, the VA in Huntington has a similar program that helps veterans learn alternative therapies like yoga for chronic pain. This was the closest VA for Army veteran James McCormick, so he decided to see what they offered. James was the veteran we heard from at the start of our show who decided he wanted to stop taking opioids after he says he almost overdosed. By the time he was medically retired in 2009, his body was in shambles. He didn't regret his service, and he won several medals during his time in the military.
A lot of people read the stories about, you know, the James McCormick in Iraq, and, you know, and you run around and you know, you do things that you have to do to survive. I took a lot of shots. I took a lot of pain. People don't realize that. I really took a look at myself in the mirror, and I didn't like what I saw. I didn't like who I was or what I had become.
But it wasn't until he returned to civilian life that doctors referred him to a program that could help him treat chronic pain without opioids. This was 5 years after he'd stopped taking opioids, so he'd been coping with the pain as best he could, taking ibuprofen daily.
So he said, we got a program up here called at the polytrauma unit. And we think that you would benefit from that. I spent a year and a half in the VA's polytrauma unit. A year and a half. And that's going up there at least 3 days a week. Driving to and from the Huntington VA. And yes, it was a pain. And yes, it was a challenge at times. But they started to train me in different things. I had a memory issue. I had an anger issue. I had, you know, legs issues and hand issues and head splitting all the time issues. It seemed like everything hurt. My hurt hurt. You know what I mean? And when you come off those pills and you become used to taking the edge off and then you don't have that anymore, you know, it is a transition period. They got me through that.
The polytrauma unit at the Huntington VA did help McCormick. Polytrauma rehabilitation works with people who have suffered multiple injuries, like being shot in combat multiple times. The program included regular sessions of alternative treatment like physical therapy, exercise therapy, chiropractic care, and even yoga.
You know, I never saw myself as ever doing yoga or stretching. Those things were implemented into this polytrauma program. They have a gym up there. Sometimes just going up there and being able to work out with other veterans was very therapeutic for me, both physically and mentally.
Getting to the VA meant McCormick had to drive a 3-hour round trip about 3 days a week from Mason County to Huntington to get to his appointments. Gradually, he noticed improvements in his flexibility, his headaches decreased, and his overall health improved.
But it did get to a point of manageability, to where I realized that I don't have to be a slave to a pill, to a narcotic.
The VA also recommended he go to a massage therapist, and the therapist he went to incorporated music into his treatment plan to help take his mind off the pain. He also went to a chiropractor outside of the VA. All of these things, he says, helped him manage his pain after he completed the VA's year-and-a-half polytrauma program.
Let's not shut the door on alternative therapies. You know, people thought I was, you know, weird or whatever for listening to music therapy, but it really helped me dealing with my headaches, you know, or that you're really weird because, you know, you're going to see a massage therapist. Oh, you're just being spoiled. No, I'm really trying to keep from taking opiates because I don't want to become an addict.
James McCormick had to drive an hour and a half to the closest VA to receive treatment. That's not an option for all patients. And even more rare for veterans is access to chiropractic care. In fact, the very first chiropractor to work for the VA is based in Martinsburg, West Virginia. Sean Neff has been a chiropractor there since 2004. He says chiropractors treat chronic pain by adjusting a patient's back, shoulders, hips, and neck, focusing on increasing joint function.
So it helps promote movement, and moving is one of the best treatments for chronic pain.
When someone becomes injured, Dr. Neff says, the injured person usually stops moving their body as much, which can lead to other problems or injuries down the road.
And kinesiophobia, or movement avoidance or fear, is kind of the harbinger of bad things to come with chronic pain. It's one of the things that we actually measure. And that's where chiropractic and the yoga and physical therapy and all these things are towards allowing normalization of movement and better function. I mean, people are always going to hurt sometimes. Everybody hurts sometimes. That's REM.
So pain is normal. But if doctors can help patients maintain function, become more flexible, more active, this is one of the best long-term treatments, he says, for chronic pain. One of Dr. Neff's patients is Air Force veteran Charles Stanton, who injured his back while serving in the military. When he received his military retirement, he wanted to try chiropractic therapy, but there wasn't a chiropractor at his closest VA in Beckley, West Virginia.
No, they didn't have anything like that in Beckley. There probably was a chiropractor or two that did private practice, but when I got out and started seeing a VA, I was so happy with everything, I didn't really want to go anywhere else, so I didn't pursue any other options.
There still is not a chiropractor working at the Beckley VA or any other VA in West Virginia aside from the one in Martinsburg. Stanton moved to that city 3 years ago and has been going to Dr. Neff ever since. He says it's helped tremendously. He was able to wean himself off of his pain medication after he began chiropractic treatment. He says he's not surprised he was injured during his service in the Air Force. Many of his fellow aircraft mechanics were also injured in one way or another.
My career field, obviously being aircraft mechanics, I used to look at the old guys and they were about 2 feet from a wheelchair, and I was like, that is never going to happen to me. But it's like riding a motorcycle. It's not when you're going to wreck. You know, it's not that you're not going to wreck. You're going to wreck eventually. You know, it's the same thing when you're carrying, 200-pound brake stacks 2 miles out to the aircraft and things that you're doing. You're eventually going to get hurt. Unfortunately, my first injury was my back, and after that, it just kind of. But a lot of those guys that I know that went on and retired and did the full 20, a lot of them are in a lot of pain. And actually, the last few years, I've lost a lot of them that they've killed themselves because they couldn't deal with it. So, but their knees were shot, their back, their shoulders, their neck. I mean, it was just, they were used up.
Most doctors agree that alternative treatment isn't right for all chronic pain patients, and there are some injuries or diseases that simply cannot be fixed with physical therapy, chiropractic care, or even surgery. Doctors at the VA we spoke to say there are some cases when opioid pain medicine is the best option for some patients, especially for people going through cancer treatments or end-of-life care. Finding the right treatment takes time. Sadly, for some veterans, the pain becomes unbearable, and this may be one reason why so many veterans commit suicide. Active military personnel have some of the most dangerous jobs, and many return from war with physical and mental scars. Again, here's veteran James McCormick.
It's a rough environment. It's rugged. You know, we sleep at peace at night because there's rough and rugged people that are ready to go out and do the business that needs to be done.
So is there a way that it doesn't have to be so rough? Or does this culture of pushing through the pain simply come with the territory of protecting our country?
You know, no, there's no way to not make it rough. If you start to back off of the, it's always going to be tough, and I hate it because I got two sons that are in now, and they're pretty rough and tough individuals, and they have to be, and they grew up tough because, you know, life is hard. Life is not going to be easy on you. We would like to be able to tell people when you get hurt, deal with the pain then. Instead of letting it go and letting it go. I let it go.
We want to hear from you. Do you know a veteran who suffers from chronic pain? Do you? Are you getting the help you need? Is living in rural Appalachia a barrier for you to access alternative treatments like physical therapy, yoga, or chiropractic care? Send us a tweet at InAppalachia or send us an email to feedback@wvpublic.org. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll hear the next part of our new Inside Appalachia series, The Struggle to Stay. You're Inside Appalachia. I'm Jessica Lilly. This is what she said. She said my back used to hurt, now I wish it was dead. All because of what the doctor said. Yeah, things in the holler, they ain't the same. People in the holler can't stand the pain. Used to order to the company store, now the white coat man gonna own your soul.
Have you ever left home or wondered if life would be different if you left West Virginia? Inside Appalachia's new series called The Struggle to Stay follows six young people who are all struggling with the question, do I stay or do I go?
So I am homeless, jobless, with $10.
At the end of the day, I don't know if I'll stay.
Because it's hard to want to stay here, in my opinion, because it is so rough.
Listen to The Struggle to Stay every week on the Inside Appalachia podcast or visit wvpublic.org.
Support for Inside Appalachia is provided by Concord University in Athens, West Virginia. With career-focused liberal arts education in more than 80 degrees and programs to pursue various career options, not just a single job. More at concord.edu.
Here on Inside Appalachia, we've started a new series called The Struggle to Stay. The stories follow Appalachians as they try to figure out if they will stay or leave home and how they're going to survive if they do stay. Our first Appalachian in this series is Colt Brogan. He's a 20-year-old West Virginian who says he's determined to stay. More than just living here, though, Colt says he has big goals. He hopes to someday own a farm. And last time we learned about Colt's struggle with drugs and his rocky relationship with his mom. But for better or for worse, Colt's struggle to stay story and his goal to become a farmer is connected to his mother.
And despite everything, she always had a green thumb, and I think that's somewhat where I got my green thumb. It's from my mother. Like, anything she would plant, she's planted a little bit of everything, flowers and crops and stuff like that, and everything I've ever seen her plant has grown with almost no maintenance. Strange.
Colt sees farming as his ticket to stay because, more than being a farmer, he wants to feel rooted to the land where his family has lived for generations. But as Roxy Todd found in spending time with Colt and his family, making that dream a reality is complicated.
At Lincoln County High School, Colt spends most of his time working inside two heated greenhouses. Or, when the weather warms up, he plants vegetables inside a plastic hoop house, an unheated greenhouse which he helped build. Today, Colt and his coworkers are loading boxes of veggies that they're selling to the Wild Ramp Market in Huntington, West Virginia. Today's harvest includes 2 pounds of spinach.
And then we have bunching onions or green onions, kind of close, very similar to the wild onions you'll see. And then we have a very colorful Swiss chard that has yellow, pink, and white stems.
He's learning to farm as part of a project called Refresh Appalachia, a 2.5-year training project with the Coalfield Development Corporation. Colt has to attend classes at a community college, work at least 30 hours a week learning to farm, and meet with the rest of his team at least once a month. The education, training, and even paychecks are funded through federal grants and private donations. He started this program back in 2015, and if everything goes as planned, he'll have an associate's degree in applied science and skills to be a farmer.
And then there's a few corn starts, and the rest of this greenhouse is covered in tomatoes and peppers.
It's hard work and several things to juggle, but Colt is determined to finish. He's wanted to be a farmer since he was about 13 years old, when his family moved onto land that's been in the family for generations.
I lived on my great-great-grandfather's farm for about 2 years.
He says his mom always talked about her dream of getting this family farm, the place where she spent holidays and summers as a kid.
Well, my mother's always wanted a farm, and she talked about it her whole life and how she used to grow up on this magical, the nostalgic sense that she said it was magic, growing up on the farm. And I feel like for her it was more of a carefree situation because she was younger and she didn't have responsibilities of the farm.
I always felt that my dreams were simple. I just wanted to have a farm and a family and a horse to ride around on. That's all I wanted in life.
Maria Murado says in 2010, it seemed like her dream had come true. Her boyfriend at the time bought her family farm, and Colt's family moved onto the land. But 3 years later, when she and her boyfriend broke up, he kept the property.
And it took most of my life to get it, and I couldn't even keep it. Physically and mentally, he abused me. And I couldn't stand to see my kids go through it anymore. And I left him.
The breakup and the loss of her family farm was devastating for Colt's mom. It still is.
Like I said, I feel like I have no purpose at all. I feel hopeless. I feel all's lost.
According to Colt, his mom's problems with drug and alcohol addiction got much worse when she lost the family farm.
Something snapped in her, and she kind of gave up on life a little bit every day, a little bit more every day.
Colt's mom says addiction is something from the past, but she didn't want to talk about this on the recorder. As a single mom, she had to work several jobs, and they struggled with money. Her mom and her sister helped take care of Colt.
If I had it to do all over again, I wouldn't have worked a day. I'd have stayed right home with my boy. He missed me, is what it was. That's what hurts me. He missed me.
After she lost the family farm, she and Colt and Colt's little brother River moved back to their small house along the Coal River. But things were chaotic and unstable there, as far as Colt remembers. Drugs had moved into the community. It seemed like addiction affected every family. The instability from his childhood is still something he carries with him today, even though he doesn't live with his mom anymore.
I come to houses like Ben's house.
Ben Gilmer is Colt's boss at Refresh Appalachia.
And I see a family doing well. I mean, they have a house, they get along, it seems, and their kids are happy. And I get tore up inside, and I can't fight back tears, and I'm just feel out of place because this is not what I'm used to. I'm not used to things going smoothly. I'm used to tension and vices and drugs and alcohol and problems. And when I see the opposite of that, anytime I see the opposite of that, I feel like, I don't know, I just feel... I feel emotionally detached, but, and sad. I don't know why that I can't stop that feeling, but that's the way I get. I just get tore up inside.
Colt wants to have a life like Ben has, stable, with happy children, a partner that he gets along with. That dream is almost always on his mind. So is farming. He doesn't have hopes of buying back his family farm. It's too big, too expensive, he says. But if he could just get some sort of land where he could grow food, he says he'd be happy.
Farmers have to really take their what they do seriously because it's their life. They're sustaining life, and they're also trying to sustain their own life and make, you know, profit off of it.
Even though Colt doesn't spend much time with his mom, she says she's extremely proud of him.
So I think it's just awesome, and I'm so into hearing his achievements.
Doing something so, like, old-fashioned in some ways, like farming is kind of old-fashioned. Do you think that he'll be able to make a living at it?
I hope so. I think we need it still. Absolutely need it still.
That's the other side of the flag, right? A farmer. It's a coal miner and a farmer on the West Virginia flag.
He's talking about the West Virginia state flag, which depicts a coal miner standing with a mining pick on one side and a farmer with an axe and a plow on the other.
I feel like I'm on the other side of it, of the flag, I guess you'd say. Like, I feel like coal mining was good for a long time or whatever. It was like a gold rush or something. It's good while it lasts, and then, you know, when it's over, it's really awful for at least a spell.
But farming takes a lot of investment. Land, equipment, and right now, he's just struggling to pay his bills. He has no idea how he will even be able to save up enough money to buy land, at least not anytime soon.
The hardest thing is investing in this community and wanting to be in it, and then just, like, hitting all these, like, barriers, you know, that are put up by whether it be taxes or whether it be available land or whether it be just the outrageous price of certain land, like especially farmland and stuff like that. Just how unrealistic that is for a young person. I feel like it's, even for like a middle-aged person, you know, like 30s or something, it's still kind of unrealistic to be like, yeah, you get 2 acres in a house for like 70, 80 grand. Like, it's just, for me, that's hard because, I mean, if I bought just land, then I still need to put something on it. And that's expensive too, even just a little something.
In the short term, Colt doesn't know what will happen to him next year when his 2.5-year contract with Coalfield Development is complete. Will he need to move to another part of the state to find work? More on that next time. For Inside Appalachia, I'm Roxy Todd in Lincoln County, West Virginia.
We'll hear the fourth installment of Colt's story next week here on Inside Appalachia. And in a few weeks, we'll meet the next person we've been following for the Struggle to Stay project, veteran Mark Combs.
And I mean, I'd love to be able to stay here. I do love this state, and you know, the people were great, but it's just dying. And you know, if you want to succeed, you got to leave.
That's coming up next month right here on Inside Appalachia. Until next week, thanks for joining me as we journey throughout Appalachia. Music in today's show was provided by Creeks Don't Rise with White Coat Man, Dinosaur Burps, Marisa Anderson, Larry Dowling, Ben Townsend, and Heroes Are Gang Leaders. Patrick Stevens is our audio mixer. Roxy Todd helped produce. Jesse Wright is our executive producer. He also edited our show this week. We'd love to hear from you. You can email us at feedback@wvpublic.org. Find us on Twitter @InAppalachia. You can also address your letters to Inside Appalachia in care of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, 600 Capitol Street, Charleston, West Virginia, 25301. The Inside Appalachia podcast is available on iTunes, Downcast, wvpublic.org, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Jessica Lilly. Inside Appalachia is a news and public affairs production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for Inside Appalachia is provided by Concord University in Athens, West Virginia. With career-focused liberal arts education in more than 80 degrees and programs to pursue various career options, not just a single job. More at concord.edu.